You're listening to episode 44 of the Tennis Files podcast with special guest Neil Endicott.
Welcome to the Tennis Files podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey, everybody, we're back. Welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files podcast. My apologies for the delay in between episode 44 and 43. I went on a family vacation for a bit a few weeks ago, and I also have been working my butt off, every day after work and before work on a huge project that's going to end up taking about 4 months to put together. But I can't reveal it quite yet, but it's going to be a really awesome event that's going to help everybody improve their tennis games, and it's going to be free to watch as well, too. So it's going to be just amazing, and I'll give you guys more details as it comes around, which will actually be in late March. So yeah, I mean, with my family vacation, it was fantastic. I got to chill and rest, and I also saw my friend Bill down there, and we hung out a bit. And what was even cooler as well is that we were able to visit the USTA National Tennis Center in Orlando, which is a massive facility, 100 courts. And I actually ran into Eric Buderak, who is just a fantastic guy, and was a former pro doubles player. Sorry, former professional tennis player, rather. And he did extremely well in doubles. I think he was top 15 in the world in doubles. And so we were talking, and I hope to have him on my podcast sometime. And also, I saw a UST Pro Circuit women's 25K tournament. So, that included a lot of top 300 women's tennis players, professional tennis players. And it was also amazing to see Sophie Chang, who is a Maryland native, which is the same state I'm from, and who was also a guest on episode 15 of the Tennis Files podcast. And I don't know if it was my good luck charm or what, but she ended up winning the doubles event. So that's pretty amazing. I think she had like two or three third set tiebreaker wins in that too, which was fantastic. So great to see that. But yeah, it's been good. I've been working hard for you guys. And today's episode is really fantastic as well, because we're going to have Neil Endicott educate us on mindfulness-based tennis psychology. And I've had a lot of you guys contact me saying that your biggest challenge in tennis is actually the mental aspect, whether you're losing focus during matches or you get nervous or you succumb to the pressure or whatever. But Neil is here on this episode to talk about ways in which you can, improve your awareness and your mental abilities, and so that you can play better tennis and more confident tennis. So without further ado, here is my interview with Neil Endicott. Hey guys, warm welcome to the Tennis Files podcast. This is Mehrban, and I have the honor and pleasure of introducing Neil Endicott to the Tennis Files podcast. Neil provides mental training to tennis players around the world using the mindfulness-based tennis psychology method, which is a very unique method that I'm really excited to talk to Neil about. He founded MBTP in 2010. And since then, he's written numerous articles about the mental side of tennis and also produced a lot of great content about it. He's also written on big sites like the Huffington Post about different players and their mental attitudes and states. And I'm, especially interested in Neil's teachings about mindful meditation and how it has helped, so many great athletes bounce back from tough losses and succeed. So, Neil, again, thanks so much for coming on to the show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure as well. So I just want to kind of, dive into how you got where you are today. So, how did you end up becoming an expert on the mental side of tennis?
Well, I've been a player since I was a kid, a lover of the game, student of the game for a long, long time. And in my mid-20s, I learned mindfulness, not for anything to do with tennis at all. It was just for work stress. I wanted a better way of dealing with stress in my everyday life. So I learned mindfulness, did a mindfulness meditation course. And I had the unintended benefit that my tennis improved, which was a big surprise to me. I wasn't expecting that at all. I was playing with a new kind of freedom, a new kind of flow on court. And crucially, I think for me, I was not so affected by negative emotions, which had been a big deal for me when I was, particularly when I was a younger player. When I was a teenager, I struggled a lot with anger on court. I wasn't a racket smasher or anything like that, but internally, I felt a lot of anger and frustration when I played. And it really limited my game. But I found in this unexpected way, when I did this mindfulness training in my 20s, that my tennis improved, that I wasn't getting bogged down with emotion anymore. So I developed this in my own space on court. I was experimenting with it, thinking, you know, what can I do with this new ability? Because I was still struggling somewhat from time to time with negative emotions. I was thinking, can I tweak this skill that I've learned in my own game and make it better? So I developed new techniques that I used on court practices, short mindful routines that I could use in a match if I was struggling with emotion, if I was struggling with nerves or anything like that. And I also looked into the academic work on this topic, because what I didn't realize when I first discovered mindfulness, that it's actually not just being taught as a way of reducing stress, but it's also being used in sports psychology. So I looked at the literature, I looked at the sports psychology literature, and found a very interesting body of research which started, I guess it was around 2000, 2001. Psychologists Frank Gardner, Zella Moore had developed a mindfulness-based approach to sports psychology as an alternative to traditional methods, which in their view were not proven to be effective. So the literature on traditional sports psychology methods did not show efficacy. So they went down a different route. They thought, okay, let's try something a bit different. Let's try a mindfulness-based approach. And that means an approach based on acceptance of your mental experience, as opposed to the old methods of sports psychology, which are based on the idea of changing your mental experience, trying to change it to be better or to be more positive. So I looked at this literature, was impressed with what they were finding out. You know, they were showing that this was improving athletes' concentration, improving accuracy, but most interestingly for me, it was actually improving athletes' ability to play in the zone, which is that sort of fabled place that we all want to get to. It's certainly where I wanted to get to. And I had experienced that in my own life, that learning mindfulness had helped me let go of a lot of negative stuff on court. So having looked at the literature, you know, I was developing my own methods, and I thought, well, actually, I should share this and see if I can get this to work for other people as well. So I put together the online course, Mindfulness-Based Tennis Psychology course, which I developed in 2010, and that's been available for a number of years now. Many, many people around the world have done this course. And over the years, I developed coaching as well. So I now actually spend a good deal of my time coaching one-to-one in this method. I work with all sorts of players around the world. I've been just hugely, hugely pleased with the way that this has taken off, that my experience was just me on court, you know, 10 years ago when I learned mindfulness, thinking this is interesting. And now it's helping, you know, scores and scores, hundreds of people around the world. That is basically how this all began and how I got where I am now.
Well, that's a lot of great stuff. A lot of great stuff in there, Neil, and I really appreciate that. And you know, when you mentioned the concept of accepting thoughts that come in your head versus trying to battle them, that just kind of That's very, I like that a lot because it's, you know, if you try to battle something, you know, you can think of there being a back and forth and then a lot of frustrations. Whereas if you just say, okay, you know, I have this negative thought and this occurred and then move on. I mean, I think that's obviously a much more productive way to go about things. And we're, you know, obviously going to talk a lot more about this concept and MBTP as well. But I just kind of am interested to go way back to when you mentioned that you, when you first took that course. Do you remember, you know, who taught that course or what it was about?
I do, yeah. No, it's actually quite a, the course was taught by quite a well-known mindfulness expert in the UK, a guy called Michael Chaskelson, has written a number of books on mindfulness. Nothing to do with sports, I have to add. This is all, I think his expertise is in mindfulness in the workplace and general mindfulness. So there was no sports-related content at all to it, and I had no expectation that there would be any benefit for my tennis. So it was a surprise to me that it helped. But of course, it makes a great deal of sense in hindsight, you know, as to why it helped, because mindfulness is all about learning to notice our mental experience and allow it to be there. Now, that sounds kind of simple in a way, but of course, we don't do that most of the time. Most of the time, we're on a kind of autopilot where we're being driven, if you like, by the thoughts and emotions that are passing through our minds. So, you know, when we're in that autopilot state, we have a limited amount of choice about how we react or what we do. I mean, you see it, of course, all the time, even at the very top of the game, where players lose it. You know, they lose it on court with anger or frustration of some kind, and they just explode. And this can linger in some players' games over the course of games or even over the course of most of a match. It's almost entirely counterproductive. And, you know, the core kind of mechanism, psychological mechanism that's driving it is that kind of autopilot. It's being driven by emotion, driven by patterns of thought, negative thought generally. And mindfulness is about developing a very particular type of skill. It's about learning how to pay attention to what's going through our minds without judging it. So, I mean, in other words, you could say that it's about learning to notice or knowing what's happening in our minds without getting carried away by it. It's a simple concept in a way, but it's actually quite difficult to develop, and it takes quite a lot of practice. But anyone can learn it. Anyone can learn it. So yeah, it was a powerful thing for me. It was a very powerful thing for me when I realized what had happened and why I was suddenly playing with this kind of freedom that I didn't previously have. And the tweaks that I made to the mindfulness that I'd learned was really about making it specific to tennis and really understanding the psychological processes that happen on the tennis court and noticing the triggers which are happening all the time during a tennis match and working out how you could use mindfulness and mindful routines on court to deal with those things.
Right. Now, that's a lot of fantastic content in what Neil just said. And so, you know, Neil, if you could, you know, go back in time and give advice to your 16-year-old self, or really anybody for that matter, as to what steps they should take if they were having trouble mentally in the game, what would you tell them to do?
Well, if I was speaking to my 16-year-old self, I would say, and of course, actually now I do speak to a lot of young players these days. I coach a lot of young players who, many of whom actually in similar situations to me, where they were struggling with anger, frustration on court, getting stuck in negative patterns of thinking during matches. The first thing I would say is don't be ashamed to focus on the mental side of the game. Okay, so sometimes players will feel reticent to deal with the mental side of it because they believe it's a sign of weakness, that it's somehow like admitting that you're not strong or you're not mentally strong. The way that I approach it is to say that your mental skills are no different to your physical skills, no different to your technique on court. You have to build them. It's the same, you know, if you want to have stronger arms and stronger legs, you've got to go to the gym. It's the same with your mental skills. We're not born, most of us aren't, I think, particularly born with very strong mental skills. There is variation between people in terms of how well they deal with emotion. But these are things we have to learn. And there's no shame at all in it. In fact, it's the wise thing to do. It takes wisdom to say, you know, I need to develop my mental strength. So, you know, it's a training like anything else. And we, you know, one of the great proponents of mindfulness in tennis is one of the greatest players of all time, Novak Djokovic, or Djokovic, as you say in the States. Djokovic, you know, absolutely dedicated to mindfulness. You know, he sees his mental training as equal to his physical training. It's not something which is kind of like a bonus or an optional extra. It's an incredibly important, integral part of the way that he trains, the way that he plays. So, and that's very much the approach that I take to it, which is that this is something that should be a core part of everybody's tennis training.
I certainly agree with that, Neil. And can you give us maybe some insight into as far as what you've seen Novak do in his mental training?
Well, we don't know a huge amount of detail about what he does in terms of his mental training, but what we do know is that he practices mindfulness. And we know why he practices it, because he told us, because, you know, he's one of the very few players who's quite open about his mental training. Most players are pretty tight-lipped about mental training, and that may have something to do with what I was saying just now about, you know, it being seen as a sign of weakness to train mentally, which, of course, it's not, but that may explain why some players just don't talk about it. Novak has spoken about mindfulness many times. He's written about it in his book, the book Serve to Win, which was published, I think, three or four years ago. And the thing about Novak, I think, is he's such an interesting example because he is a really emotional player. This is a guy who has struggled with anger, who struggled with self-doubt. You know, he's told us all about this stuff. You know, the self-doubt was kind of the sense of inferiority, I think, that he felt when he came up against players like Nadal and Federer early in his career, that feeling that maybe he just wasn't good enough to beat them. And the anger, well, we still see that from him, you know, that he's got a fiery personality. So it's not like he's some sort of naturally calm guy. He's actually someone who struggles with anger. He struggles with all sorts of negative emotions, but he's learned a really effective way of dealing with them. And that method that he's chosen is mindfulness. And it's all about learning how to be with the negative emotions that you feel. And that's something that I think that he's done pretty well. You know, he's not perfect. We see sometimes that anger gets the better of him. But if you look at his incredible transformation over the years from this, you know, a remarkably talented player who perhaps felt somewhat in the shadow of Nadal and Federer, you know, he transformed into a guy who was just so focused, so concentrated, so good at dealing with the difficult emotions that he experiences, you know. Really good examples, I think, are those. I mean, so many classic matches now where Novak has come back from, you know, looking like he was down and out in a match. He's managed to come back and win from match point down in multiple very big matches. You know, of course, the famous Federer semifinals at the U.S. Open. Great match against Songa a few years ago at the French Open. Kevin Anderson match at Wimbledon a few years ago. You know, there are quite a few examples of that where he comes from the brink and has this incredible mental focus. I think mindfulness has a lot to do with that. And I think he does as well. So it's a powerful method. And of course, there's no better example than Novak Djokovic to show what mindfulness can do in a player's game.
Definitely, Neil. And so one thing that I want to maybe dive into and help, you know, myself understand is, I guess there's the thought that some players naturally need to get a bit more pumped up and fired up in order to play optimally, while others are in a more prefer to play in a more relaxed or calmer state in order to play their best. And can we distinguish kind of maybe the players who need to get fired up versus, you know, this concept that we think of a thought and accept it? I mean, can you kind of dive into that?
Yes, and it's actually a really good question, because it's getting at something which I encounter quite a lot in my coaching, which people will come to me and they'll say, look, I'm interested in the method you're teaching, but I'm a fiery player, right? I like being pumped up and I like being emotional. I like that approach to the game. Sometimes it gets the better of me, but that feels like the way I am. Okay, that's what people quite often will say to me. The key thing about mindfulness is it doesn't mean that you have to be like some kind of Zen master on court. It's not that at all. It's all about learning how to deal with whatever emotion you're feeling at a particular time on court. So you may well be somebody who likes to be pumped up and likes to be kind of energized, and that's fine. If that serves you well, that's really good. What mindfulness is doing is it's looking for the moments where being emotional or being pumped up can be a problem. So it's creating a kind of awareness so that you can be, as a player, aware of what's going on in your mind. If being pumped up serves you well, that's good. But be aware of that, and be aware of any moment where that can tip over into an emotional experience, a mental experience, which isn't serving you well. That's what mindfulness can do for you. It's not about becoming an extremely calm person all the time. And I think, again, Novak, what a great example Novak Djokovic is of that, because he's not calm all the time. And he is emotional. So it's not about fundamentally changing who you are in terms of personality as a player or as a person. It's about learning how to deal with any aspects of your mental experience on court which aren't helping you. And so you could be a mindfulness devotee and be somebody who's pretty fiery on court, and somebody who has a very sort of energized, pumped up game. And I think, again, Novak, a good example of that. So mindfulness skills do not imply that you have to be like a monk on court. Definitely not. There are many ways that you can play, many types of personalities that can be expressed on court while still being mindful.
Definitely, Neil. That's, again, great stuff. And it kind of just reminds me of a great quote from Sun Tzu, who said, "Know your enemy and know yourself, and you can fight 100 battles without disaster." So it's just knowing, you know, what fuels you and what, you know, what makes you play optimally, and being aware of what's happening is kind of in line with your philosophy here. And I'm always interested to see how people, you know, because you obviously created, you know, such a comprehensive course, and it has many different modules or classes or whatnot. But how did you go about deciding what needed to be in the course, and what would help tennis players, you know, if they followed your structure?
Well, it's actually been a process of evolution in some ways. I've learned a great deal over the years through my interaction with my clients, seeing what's worked for them and what hasn't worked. So the course has actually evolved in many ways over the years. The core thing that all of the practices that I teach are getting at is the ability to notice our mental experience, the ability to allow our mental experience to be there, and the ability to refocus on the task in hand. So all mindfulness practices, although they vary in their content and they vary in the way that they get to this result, they're all kind of getting at that idea. So it's this sort of noticing experience, mental experience, allowing it to be there and refocusing on your present moment experience, what you've got to do at that particular time. So as much as the course has varied a lot over the years, I've developed it as I've learned more from my clients. The core principles have remained the same. And, the practices that I teach, I can break into three kind of categories. I teach foundational practices, which many people would recognize from sort of generic mindfulness courses they may have done for other reasons. So these are things like mindfulness of breathing practice, a body scan practice. These are kind of core mindfulness practices where you're learning to pay attention to your present moment experience, and you're learning to pay attention to things that happen in your mind and then refocus onto a particular thing. In the breath meditation, it's the breath. On the body scan, it's the sensations in your body. These are foundational practices. I teach a range of concentration practices, which are focused very much on focus, on developing a kind of calm and alert mindset, and developing that ability further to refocus your attention when you want to. And then I teach a range of on-court practices, which can actually be used during a match so that you can reconnect with those off-court practices, the foundational practices, the concentration practices, things that you can use these on-court practices are things that you can use in crisis moments that we always face at a match. If your match point down, any kind of big point, you can use it on. You can use it any time really that you're rattled in a match, if you're struggling with emotion, or you just want to focus. You just want to be more present in the match. So, so it's basically getting at, developing this sort of comprehensive mindfulness skills specific to tennis through a variety of practices, but they're all kind of united with that core thing of noticing, developing those noticing skills, allowing skills, and refocusing on the present moment, on the task that you've got to do at that moment.
Right. That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I personally wake up every day and go to the gym, and then I try to meditate for 5 to 10 minutes. Sometimes I'll use something like Headspace. It's tough. It's something where, like you said, it's like a muscle. You have to constantly work at it so that you can improve, just like anything else, like your tennis or your gym work and things like that. But that being said, because it's easier than it sounds, what it's going to sound like, I'm sure, but just want to, go through a common scenario with you, like you just mentioned, crisis moment. So let's say, let's say if I'm in a match and I get an easy sitter on a crucial break point, and then I, hit my forehand and I blast the ball long, and then I immediately, like most players do, get a negative thought about what just happened. What should the reaction be, just to make this concrete in the situation?
Sure. Well, in a sense, what I'd be wanting you to do is nothing. Ideally, what you want to do is nothing. So what we're kind of aiming at here is that we're looking for a place where you'll be able to play, make a mistake, have a negative thought, and move on. Okay. Mindfulness sort of takes as a sort of core sort of idea, core principle, the idea that basically all of our thoughts and emotions are things that we can't really control. Thoughts and emotions arise naturally in the mind, but they come sort of whether we want them to or not. Okay, so in the scenario you're talking about, you're playing, you've missed a shot that you probably should have got, and you have a negative thought. From my perspective, as a teacher of mindfulness-based tennis psychology, that's fine. If the story ended there, then that's fine, because ultimately you can't be happy about missing an easy shot. So it's totally normal to have a negative response. The important thing from my perspective is, what do you do next? If you ruminate on that missed shot, if you talk to yourself in a negative way about that missed shot, if you find yourself engaging with the negative thought that you had after missing that shot, that is where a problem can arise, because suddenly your mental space is being taken up by a lot of unnecessary thinking. The mindful approach is basically to look at that sort of scenario, notice your negative thought, and let it go. So it's a thought that's arisen in the mind. You didn't make it arise. It just happens, right? Because we can't feel happy about missing a shot. We're always going to feel a bit frustrated. The thought has arisen, and you let it go. Sounds simple, but how's it developed? It's developed through the practice of mindfulness, which I teach. You know, I teach this over, you know, with my clients. I teach it over usually an 8 to 10 week course period. So this is like personalized training in the mindfulness-based tennis psychology method. My online course is done over 6 weeks, and so it takes a bit of time. It takes a bit of time to develop that skill. But in principle, that is basically what you would be doing. I think when you've developed mindfulness skills, you know, you will experience, you're still going to have negative thoughts. They're going to come, whether you want them to or not. But you'll be able to let them go, and you'll be able to notice if you start ruminating on a negative thought after a missed shot. And you can say to yourself, ah, there I am, I'm ruminating. And you can let it go. And that's a skill, it's a mental muscle that you will have developed to enable you to do that.
Right, that's fantastic. And this reminds me as well, side note, I suppose, of when I talked to Tomas Mensinger from fieldtennis.net on way back on episode 6. He wrote an article basically saying that we just have to realize that we're not machines, and nobody will make every single shot. It is normal to, you know, miss a certain percentage of shots. And so I think maybe just also thinking about that, and that, you know, we're not going to make everything. So just to, when you miss a shot, recognize that this has happened, and move on, like Neil says.
That's great advice. That's a good way of, I mean, that's very much in keeping with the mindful approach. Of course, it's absolutely true that mistakes are part of tennis. You know, we're going to make mistakes. Even in our greatest match, we're going to make a lot of mistakes. And accepting that as a normal part of the game is important. And also, I think, you know, from the mindful perspective, accepting that you're going to have a negative thought or two about some mistakes is also fine. It's just that ability to keep an awareness of where the mind is going in those circumstances. And, you know, staying mindful is about noticing where the mind is. And if it's going somewhere unhelpful, then we can refocus. We can do something else. So but I think you're absolutely right. The accepting mistakes is a basic part of tennis. That, yeah, everybody should definitely take that on board.
Right, Neil. And this is kind of a reverse question from my statement that I just made. And it's just a tough one, perhaps. But why do you think the natural reaction is to, you know, engage with yourself when you miss a shot? Why do you think that? Why is that a natural reaction?
I think it's a complex question, but here's my thoughts on it. I think that we're taught to a large extent a certain way of thinking, particularly in our Western culture. So we learn from a very young age a problem-solving mode of mind. We learn to try and work things out. Now, that's very useful. It's very good in many ways. But I think when it comes to mental experience, it can get us into trouble sometimes, because if we spend time trying to work out a negative emotion on court, then Well, I think the first obvious thing to say is that we're not going to succeed. You can't think your way out of, you can't really think your way out of a negative mental experience during a tennis match. But it's also just not the right tool for the job. So using a problem-solving approach to our mental experience tends to exacerbate the problem. We're tinkering with something with the wrong tool, mm-hmm. and we're making it worse. The mindful approach is to look at mental experience as, well, in a way, less significant. So if we have a negative thought on court, the mindful way to look at that is to say, well, we're having a negative thought. It's a negative thought. It's an event in the mind. It's not inherently significant. We don't have to draw meaning from that if we don't want to. We can just see it as an automatic response, an automatic event in the mind to a missed shot, and move on. So I think it's to a large extent, it's about the way that we've learnt to deal with our mental experience. And certainly in tennis, it just doesn't work. I think that the problem-solving mode of mind gets us into trouble. What we want to be doing is really to minimize our cognitive activity. We want to minimize our thinking on court, because as I think most people probably listening will know, think of those moments when you've been playing in the zone, those wonderful moments where you kind of slip into a sort of unselfconscious place where you're playing good tennis, things are going well for you. You've got to ask yourself, are you thinking much in those times? You're not. These are times when the mind is relatively calm. It's a kind of good autopilot, really, that place, the zone. You might have some thoughts, you might have some emotions, but they're kind of distant from you. You're not too engaged with them. This is one of the key things about mindfulness, I think, and the value of mindfulness in sports, is that mindfulness is the result of practicing mindfulness over time is that you actually do reduce your cognitive activity on court, your thinking. And that's what you want. If you want to play in the zone more often, you need to let go of thinking. You need to let go. You need to put yourself in that situation where your mind is much more likely to slip into the zone, to slip into that place of flow. So, for me, I mean, that's one of the great benefits of mindfulness. You know, we can't force ourselves into the zone, but mindfulness is a way of increasing the chances that we're going to play with flow during matches.
Certainly, Neil. I mean, we don't want to be wasting energy on things that won't ultimately produce what we want to happen on court. And it's just kind of like, you know, after a match, if you lose it, you can either ruminate on it for days and torture yourself, or you can be aware of what happened, maybe take some notes on what you can improve the next time and then move on. So Neil, I'm very interested in the meditation part of your course. And so I just wanted to ask you about that. And I guess before I ask you, I just want to tell everyone that they should definitely check out tennismentalskills.com. Right on the front page is a free guided meditation that you all should definitely, look at and try out. But what's a basic meditation that we can start with that will help us be more mindful?
Well, a basic foundational mindfulness meditation, which would give you a really good idea of what mindfulness is about, is the mindfulness of breathing meditation. As you say, there's a short guided breathing meditation on the homepage of my website, tennismentalskills.com. What you're doing in this kind of meditation is you're sitting somewhere on you want to be sitting probably on something which is like a kitchen chair or a dining chair, better than a sofa, something like that. Because the idea is we're sort of sitting upright, staying awake, which is important. We don't want to fall asleep. We're focusing on our breath. So, you know, you're noticing what it's like to breathe. You might choose a point, say, on the tip of your nose, or noticing the air coming in through your nose and what that feels like. Okay, so the task is to do that. Okay, sounds very simple. Just focus on your breath. What you'll find, of course, is that it's not that easy. Your mind actually will probably wander away to other places, daydreaming or worrying about something or planning something or asking yourself questions about what you're doing. Why am I doing this? This is the whole purpose of the practice. The idea, as I've said, about mindfulness is noticing what goes on in your mind. The mindfulness of breathing is perhaps the most sort of fundamental mindfulness practice, which enables you to become acquainted with what your mind does. And your mind will wander. And that's the nature of the mind. That's what the mind does. Not a problem. This practice is not about becoming a complete master of focusing on the breath. It's much more important to notice where your mind goes when it wanders, and then you bring it back to the breath. And this process happens again and again. Many of the listeners will probably be familiar with this practice, you know, if you've looked into mindfulness, because this is probably the first practice that you'd come across. And this is one of the foundational practices that I teach. These foundational practices are important. They support the on-court work that I also teach, which are not exactly meditation. So the on-court work that I do, these are things that you'll be doing in very short periods of time, perhaps before a big point, or perhaps at a time when you've missed a shot and you're concerned about that, you're thinking about it in a negative way, or at any point where you need to focus better in a match. So these foundational practices, like the breathing practice, they support the on-court practice the really sort of crucial practices that are going to get you through in match play in an effective way. So yeah, that's a good place to start. Have a think about looking at a mindfulness of breathing practice, which will give you a sense of what mindfulness is all about.
Fantastic, Neelan. So generally, how long should we meditate for, and should we try to increase it to as long as we can, or what's most effective?
Well, it's not necessarily a definitive answer to that. In my course, I encourage people to dedicate 20 minutes a day to the practice during the period of the course. So, if people who are doing my online course would be doing 20 minutes a day for 6 weeks, and they'd be doing a variety of different practices in that time. It's a kind of total immersion, really, because 20 minutes a day is a commitment. You've got to really put that time aside to do it. And I realize that. I think that 20 minutes a day, I would say, is kind of like your basic amount. People are always sort of free to do more. But actually, I've seen excellent results on 20 minutes. For people who don't have much time at all, or who really struggle with committing 20 minutes a day, if you did 10 minutes a day, you'd still benefit. So you can benefit from doing quite small amounts of mindfulness. But I think that by committing sort of around 20 minutes a day, you're actually giving yourself the biggest opportunity to learn what this is all about. But we've got to be flexible as well, because our lives can be very busy and, you know, lots of things can get in the way. So, you know, I wouldn't say that there's a definitive amount of time that you have to do. So it's keeping a regular practice, I think, is probably the most important thing, rather than necessarily sticking to exactly 20 minutes a day.
Sure, sure. And then maybe something like 10 in the morning and 10 at night would be okay?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I do it in the course is that there's a variety of practices of different lengths. So some of the practices are very short, 3 or 4 minutes, and some are longer, sort of 10 minutes or so. And it's a combination of different practices that you'd be doing in the course every day. But having that routine of 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening can be extremely effective for people. Some people will do the whole lot at one time of the day. As you progress with the method that I teach, you'll be doing a series of on-court practices, which are a bit different, because you're going to be using those when you're playing. And there isn't necessarily a set amount of time that you need to practice those. You've just got to integrate those into your game. There are different ways in which this can work, but the basic recommendation is a total of 20 minutes a day to get the most out of this method.
Fantastic. And as far as, I suppose it would vary with the person, but as far as seeing results, I mean, well, I guess I just want to comment that, you know, when I first started, after meditating, I just felt amazing, you know, very relaxed and more aware of myself, things like that. But, you know, is it normal for people to see results fairly quickly from this?
Yes, it is normal. And I think that, it depends on how you define quickly, because the course that I'm teaching, as I say, the online course is 6 weeks. If you work with me directly, I teach it a bit longer because I personalize the course and we have a little bit more work to do, I think, on that basis. So we might work over 8 weeks to 10 weeks. That period of time is actually a very small period of training time in the course of someone's tennis career. So in that sense, I would say that there are quick results. Do people have instantaneous results? Not generally, no. It is something that requires practice, in exactly the same way that if you went to the gym and did one session, you're not going to benefit very much from that. Some people do have a very quick response to it, however, so that some people will do the course, and after a week or two will be saying, look, this is transforming my game already. And you know, so some people really respond to it very quickly. For other people, it takes a little bit more work. In general, I see, you know, substantial results in people after about 4 weeks, probably about 4 to 5 weeks, and then suddenly people are really seeing how this is changing the way they're playing tennis. But it varies. It varies a lot. But overall, it doesn't take that long. It's something which, you know, if you dedicate the time over that period of weeks, then you're setting yourself up with a skill that you're going to have for the rest of your tennis playing career. You've got to keep it going. It's a bit like going to the gym, as we've said, that even after the course is finished, you need to keep practicing it. But the way that you practice it and how long you practice it for is up to you and what works for you. I have certain recommendations about that, but people do it in different ways.
All right, great point, Neil. You know, this is a skill that you can benefit from for a lifetime, and it's like anything else. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, they quit doing things because they expect it to make a difference immediately in their match play and such. But if you put in the hard work for a bit, then you will see the results there.
Can I say one thing, actually, Mervan? Sure. It's a very good point you've made. There's one slight thing I'd say, that I generally don't use the phrase hard work when I talk about mindfulness, because in a curious way, mindfulness is not really hard work. Although you have to commit to it and you've got to do the practice, it's actually something which is about letting go, so that it is a form of relaxation in a way. It's not the aim of mindfulness practices. We're not aiming to relax, but quite often the result of doing mindfulness practice is to relax. We can often feel relaxed after doing it. So it's a time. When you're practicing mindfulness, it's a time when you're kind of letting things go and you're giving yourself a break. You're not going over and over things in your mind. You're taking a different approach to your experience of life. And that can be, you know, for many people, it can feel like a burden is being lifted, because you're suddenly taking a different approach to your experience, your mental experience. So I don't refer to it as hard work, and I like to encourage people to think of it as something which is kind of nourishing. It's a nourishing practice, and it's something which can, you know, some people will, you know, it does involve challenge, and you do have to commit to it, but it's something that people can look forward to. You know, it can be a way of stepping out of your daily routine and, you know, going to a place which is, you know, calmer, and you know, a place where you can find some peace. And so it's a curious balance of commitment, but also what you're doing isn't really work in the conventional sense.
Right. That's a fantastic clarification. You know, I probably better said, consistent practice, as you said, and just committing to the, to the program. One quick question I want to ask, because I know you don't have much time left here, but one other scenario for you where, let's say, tennis players, they come up against playing, for example, like a high-seeded player. How can we use, kind of the philosophy in what you're talking about here to help us overcome these types of situations?
That's a really good question. And that's a scenario which arises in different forms for me a lot in my coaching work. So that particular scenario of people who struggle playing against a higher ranked player comes up a lot. I also work with a lot of people who struggle against lower ranked players. You know, that's an interesting one because, you know, something that famously John McEnroe struggled with a lot, which was, you know, he really didn't like those matches, the first and second round of Wimbledon, where he'd be playing against some guy, you know, ranked 100 in the world, because there was that mental pressure that he had to win. Everyone expected him to win. So these are the kind of things that come up again and again in my coaching work. The key thing with these kind of things is that what we're looking for is to treat all our mental experience in the same way. We want to take a mindful approach to all of our mental experience. So what is it? So when you're on court, when you're facing an opponent who's higher ranked than you, and this is intimidating you in some way, or you feel like, you know, how am I going to beat this guy? Or maybe you have thoughts like, I can't beat this guy. Mm-hmm. Those are just thoughts. That's all they are. They're thoughts. They're very powerful thoughts, okay? But they're not the truth. They're just thoughts in our mind. Now, they're understandable because sometimes it can be intimidating if we're facing an opponent who is a very, very strong player, perhaps ranked much higher than us. Of course, that's going to present a challenge to us. We're going to have thoughts about that. But what mindfulness is all about is developing a kind of equanimity to our mental experience. We're treating, as far as we can, all of our mental experience in the same way. We're noticing it, and we're allowing it to be there. So we don't want to get rid of our experience at all. It's arisen in our minds pretty much automatically. Those thoughts, you know, are going to be there. If you're playing in that match, you're going to have those thoughts. The key thing is, how do you respond to those thoughts? Can you let them be there? Can you just allow them to be there, to pass through the mind, to fade in and out, as they probably will do, and just focus on your game, playing your game, because that's what's going to give you the greatest chance of success and doing well against a difficult opponent. So the practices that I teach are very much focused on building an awareness of our mental experience and learning how to sort of treat our difficult thoughts in a particular way, not reading great significance into them, just noticing them as thoughts or series of thoughts or emotions, series of emotions occurring, and allowing that process to go on in your mind, but not getting involved in it. Okay. So that's the approach that we take. You know, that's how I deal with those kind of problems. And it works. It works because ultimately you're not going to, if you have that experience on court where you're playing against somebody and they're intimidating to you for whatever reason, ultimately you just have to focus on your game, focus on your game plan. If any kind of engagement with the idea that that person's better than me or I'll never beat them isn't going to help. So, but having that thought in the first place is fine, because you can't stop that thought from coming. So that's pretty much how, you know, in a basic explanation, how I would approach those kind of problems. And I've seen it again and again that people, you know, when they develop a mindful approach to those kind of mental experiences, they do a lot better.
Wonderful, Neil. I think that's really going to help players, again, just, you know, not waste energy on these types of thoughts too much and focus, like you said, on their game plan and executing their strategies and what they need to do to win. So that's really appreciated. I know you have to run soon, so I just want to ask you, you know, you've given us so much great information today, but what's one key tip that you can give our audience to help them improve their tennis games?
Focus on the mental side of tennis. Okay, so this is, I know it sounds obvious, we've been talking about it for about an hour, but this is, it's so important because it's overlooked. It's overlooked quite a lot. So people think, yeah, I've got to develop my fitness. That's fine. There's no question about that. You've got to develop your fitness. And people think, I've got to develop my technique. Yes, you've got to do that. Don't overlook the mental side of tennis. You'll be, you know, it has extraordinary benefits. If you doubt that, look at Novak Djokovic. There are a range of other top players who have trained mentally. The fact that they don't talk about it very much does not mean that they're not doing it. So there's a great deal of mental training that does go on. They just don't talk about it. It doesn't matter what kind of player you are. You might be an elite player. You might be a beginner. You can benefit substantially from mental training. And, you know, here's another thing that I always say to my clients, okay? Mental training is not just about improving your results, okay? It's not just about improving your ability to play in the zone. It's also about maximizing your ability to enjoy the game. Because when we struggle with difficult emotions like nerves or anger on court, or if we struggle with choking or any other kind of problem like that, mental problem on court, it's painful, right? It hurts. It's horrible. It spoils the pleasure that we can take in the game. And tennis, you know, this is, you know, I'm assuming because everyone listening to this show loves tennis, right? And it's we want to enjoy it to the maximum. When we develop mental skills, and particularly, you know, obviously I teach mindfulness-based skills, these help us to enjoy our tennis to the maximum, okay? And I see this again and again, people who've struggled with the mental side of tennis, or even players who just come to me and say, look, I'm not struggling with anything in particular mentally. I just want to be the best that I can be when I'm nervous on match point or something like that. Okay. Time and again, people come back to me and they say, look, I'm enjoying playing tennis more now. This is great. And, you know, so that's another side of it. That's another side of the mental of mental training, which brings these sort of wonderful benefits. So, yeah, to sum that up, really consider focusing on mental training. It's really important.
Love that, Neil. And also this training will transfer to other parts of your life as well. So, you know, you won't only, I mean, you use this to play better tennis and enjoy the game, and you can also use this these philosophies to help you in your life and other professional and other decisions. So it's wonderful. So Neil, where can we find you online?
Well, you can come to my website at tennismentalskills.com. And there you'll find all the details about me and the method that I teach, mindfulness-based tennis psychology. You know, you can download the online course through my website. If you're interested in coaching, just drop me a line and we'll set up a chat and we can take things from there. So, you know, yeah, check it out and look forward to speaking to you if you're interested in getting in touch.
Fantastic, Neil. I just want to thank you so much for helping our audience better understand how they can, you know, play better tennis through this mindfulness-based tennis psychology method, and I highly encourage everybody to check out Neil's website, tennismentalskills.com, and his MBTP course as well. And yeah, just thanks for everything you do, Neil. I really appreciate you coming on the show and hope to speak with you again soon.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Neil. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed my interview with Neil Endicott from tennismentalskills.com. I really appreciate Neil coming onto the show today and teaching us about mindfulness-based tennis psychology. And I'd really appreciate it if you guys would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast, whether that's through iTunes or whatever podcast app you use to listen to the show. And I always love leaving you guys with a quote at the end of the show when I can remember to do that. And today's quote is from Eckhart Tolle. And please excuse me if I mispronounce that name. And he said, "In today's rush, we all think too much, seek too much, want too much, and forget about the joy of just being." Thanks, guys. And if you want the show notes for this episode, you can go to tennisfiles.com/44. All right. Well, it's a pleasure having you all listen to the show. And I look forward to having you listen into the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.